Welcome to Ask the Experts, a monthly podcast taking on the latest questions around healthcare legislation and compliance.
Welcome to another edition of Ask the Experts. Today's guest is Crystal Burtner, Senior Compliance Specialist. Welcome to the podcast, Crystal.
Thanks so much, Shelley. It's great to be here today.
Crystal, can you please confirm if employers will receive a request from CMS for the RxDC missing information if the employer doesn't provide the data to the carrier?
Yeah, so if a carrier does not have all of the required information from the employer, such as the premium details, they will still submit their portion. If the employer does not submit the necessary information to the carrier, CMS does not send out any requests on them needing to do so. The only outreach from CMS would be in the event of a potential penalty. We have seen that some carriers have sent out information to employer groups, however, if they did not submit the information required by their deadline.
When are penalties applicable for RxDC reporting? My thinking is that if the carrier reported on the behalf and the employer failed to respond to the carrier should have been utilizing the data that they had on hand, so there should be no penalty. Can you please confirm if I'm correct?
So if an employer does not submit the requested information to the carrier by the carrier's internal deadline, the carrier will still submit the data that they have to CMS. However, if any of the required information, such as the employer versus employee contribution toward the premiums, is missing, as the carrier won't have that data, it will be up to the employer to submit that portion to CMS themselves if they miss the carrier deadline. Some carriers have sent out communications that state they will still submit the report to CMS, but without that data from the employer. Now, as far as penalties, CMS requires complete submissions, and if any portion is omitted, the employer could still be subject to penalties, which can be up to $100 per day per participant. Now, to avoid this, employers should ensure that the contribution data is submitted to the carrier by their deadline or directly to CMS by June 1st if that carrier deadline is missed.
My understanding is that the only compliant way of an employer paying an employee's Medicare premium is if they have less than 20 employees and they set up an HRA. Is this correct, or are there other ways of doing so?
So HRAs are one option. There are others, but they can get tricky tax-wise and require that the group work with their tax accountant and have them sign off on it and get help with getting it set up properly if they do choose to move forward. Even when reimbursement is possible for employer groups under 20 employees where Medicare is primary, they still may not want to do so after weighing the pros and cons. They, of course, would need to remain under 20 employees to continue to do so, and then there are only certain things that they can reimburse for. If considering it, I definitely recommend that they speak with their tax advisor due to the tax implications.
We have an employer that received a notice of medical support from the state, and they are asking if they should go ahead and automatically enroll the dependent or not. The employee is a new hire and not eligible until June 1st. Can you please weigh in on this?
Sure. So there are a few things to consider here. When an employer receives a notice of medical support from the state, it typically means that the state is requiring the employer to enroll a dependent child in the employee's group health plan due to a court order related to child support. The employer should refer to their SPD or RAP document, as that should include qualified medical child support order procedures in that document, or they may have a separate document that outlines the procedures related to it. Now, with that being said, the employer is legally obligated to process the enrollment, assuming the employee is eligible and not still in their new hire waiting period. If the notice is requesting the enrollment to be effective before they're eligible on June 1st, The employer will need to respond to the notice and indicate why coverage cannot yet be provided. The employer would then need to go ahead and process the enrollment once eligible. The employer will also want to make sure that they notify the employee that the notice was received and that the dependents will be enrolled in coverage. I'd start first by looking at the internal benefit documents to confirm any process in writing is followed. But in short, yes, the employer is legally obligated to process that enrollment.
We have a group that just lost their HR person, and they verified with their payroll company that they did not file a 1094 form or 1095 forms last year. Is there a way to search or contact the IRS to see if the employer filed in prior years?
The IRS does not have a search tool to check whether an employer has filed the forms 1094, 1095 in a prior year, as those records are confidential. If the broker nor the payroll provider have any record of this, the only option would be for the employer to call the IRS directly and ask them over the phone. An authorized individual with the employer will need to be the one to call and provide the EIN and applicable tax years to ask and confirm if prior years were filed under that EIN. I'd start there if the broker doesn't have any record of anything.
I have a few questions pertaining to ACA compliance with an employer who has a large union population. It appears to me that all employers with 50 or more full-time employees must offer health coverage. However, what constitutes a full-time employee?
Sure. So under the ACA, a full-time employee is an employee who works an average of 30 hours per week or 130 hours per month. Employers with 50 or more full-time and full-time equivalents are considered an ALE and would need to make sure that they are offering minimum essential coverage, coverage that meets minimum value, and coverage that is affordable to at least 95% of their full-time employees.
Are union employees that are covered by a collective bargaining agreement that the employer pays into considered full-time employees of the employer or their collective union?
Even if the union is the one providing the health coverage, these employees are still considered employees of the employer that they are on the payroll for and take direction from. Now, for ACA purposes, you would still count them toward the 50 full-time employee threshold if they meet the ACA definition of full-time, regardless of who provides them with their benefits. Also keep in mind here that if these employees do receive benefits from the union, they would need to receive a 1095C from both the employer and another 1095C from the union.
How do we handle a situation where we have over 50 employees April through October, but during the rainy season, we have less than 50 full-time employees?
ALE status is based on the average number of full-time employees, including full-time equivalents, over the entire previous calendar year. If the average monthly count for the prior year was 50 or more, they would be considered an ALE.
Can you please provide some clarification on who will pay the PCORI fees? I read something that said that the carrier pays, but we've been under the impression that the administrator of the plan pays. Can you please confirm?
As far as who is responsible for paying the PCORI fee, this depends on the funding status of the plan. If the plan is fully insured, then the carrier is a responsible party. But if the plan is self-funded, including level-funded plans, then the employer would be the one responsible for paying the PCORI fee. Another important point here is that if the employer has a fully insured medical plan but has an HRA that goes along with that medical plan, the employer would be responsible for paying the PCORI fee for the HRA as it is considered a self-insured health plan.
Thank you, Crystal. We hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, please contact your account manager or salesperson. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional.